You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Ashley Voss. This is WFHB local news for Tuesday, October 10th, 2023.
My parents and I could not afford my college tuition just as it was. We couldn't pay it up front, so the best option was to get a loan and then pay it back later.
This month, for the first time in over 3 years, federal student loan borrowers will be required to make monthly payments. WFHB correspondent Annika Harshbarger has more in today's feature report.
What should the vote at a first reading of an ordinance be about?
Also coming up in the next half hour, local journalist Dave Askins of the B Square Bulletin filed a report on how the Bloomington City Council conducts its first readings. But first, your local headlines.
At the Bloomington City Council meeting on October 4th, the council discussed amendments to the city's comprehensive plan, which would focus on leading pedestrian intervals and pedestrian recall phases. Council member Matt Flaherty introduced the amendments and gave background on what lead pedestrian intervals are and the work that has been done to try to implement them.
So I feel like the resolution is relatively self-explanatory in terms of its justification and impact. It is meant to be high-level policy guidance aimed at increasing safety for all street users, but especially some of the most vulnerable street users, pedestrians, and in particular, decreasing risks of death and serious injury at signalized intersections. This is a product of probably 2 years worth of conversations with multiple departments and city staff, engineering especially, who sort of controls the sort of implementation of the signal timing and phasing across the city, with the exception of a few intersections that are owned by NDOT, but also with planning staff who has a role in the sort of overall planning of the transportation system, and public works staff, streets division, which has a role in sort of operating and implementing changes to our signalized intersections. So the resolution calls for an amendment to the transportation plan within the next 300 days to come through Planning Commission. And that timeline was chosen on the basis of the update that's already in motion, have a safety update to the transportation plan to, I think, allow us to be eligible for the Safe Streets for All grant program from the federal government. Council members may recall that a month or two ago, the council adopted similar guidance around the inclusion of the Council for Community Accessibility's set of principles that they forwarded to the council. So it's really trying to give direction to incorporate within that plan as policy guidance. But then the second aim is really to, and the timing here in particular, is on the basis of a study that is going to be underway soon with the engineering department to adjust the timing and phasing of all of our signals across the city. Essentially, I mentioned this took place over a couple years of conversations. When I first approached at the time, Neil Copper, interim city engineer, a few years ago, asking if we could incorporate more leading pedestrian intervals as an intervention at our intersections, especially where there was high pedestrian activity, because they have been statistically shown to significantly increase safety for roadway users and pedestrians in particular. It was a little more complicated than I anticipated, in that, of course, many of our intersections sort of speak to one another, they're timed together. The technology varies greatly across signals within the city. There's limited capacity on the streets division to systematically change signals citywide. There's, I think, 90 some that we control. So all those factors made it complicated to address this in any sort of one-off situation. We have on occasion, and folks may have noticed, for instance, when we updated the intersection and signals at 3rd and Indiana, a leading pedestrian interval was included in that timing update. So, and just to clarify, what that means is that when before a light turns green, the pedestrian signal changes first a couple seconds in advance to give the pedestrian time to get into the intersection which gives more visibility essentially to the pedestrian and reduces the risk that they're going to be sideswiped by a car turning.
Council member Steve Volan asked about funding for the traffic signal modernization projects. Director of Engineering Andrew Seabor responded.
So maybe I'll try to describe a few different things that are happening. One is that we are getting close to finalizing a contract with a design consultant to implement the citywide signal retiming project. That project has federal funding in this current year's budget. So that is going to happen. We also have a budget request next year, Public Works does, to essentially upgrade signal equipment, technology. So that's push buttons, that's some new cabinets, that's additional detection that will help enable some of the features that this resolution is asking us to do. And then there are separate things ongoing in relation to the Safe Street for All plan and budget.
So it's safe then to characterize Mr. Flaherty's proposal as whenever you do have the funds, we should do things in this way. And it's not that he's making this request in anticipation of directly tied to the funds. This is good policy, and we're in the process of doing this, and he's trying to make sure that this type of signalization is implemented once you get to it. Is that a safe way to characterize it?
I think so. I'd let him speak to it too, but I think the primary driver is that we do have that citywide signal retiming project that is just about to kick off.
Councilmember Jim Sims said he was in support of the resolution. However, he pointed out that the wording in the resolution was too strict.
As we go further, first, I do want to say I do support this resolution and its intentions. But one last question that I do have. Resolutions, as I understand it, are non-binding, and I don't think this will be. But I do see there's words like must, and it changes the plan commission's submission time from 60 days to 300 days, which is more than non-binding. In fact, it kind of sounds a little bit binding, and I'm not so sure that's the intent. But that wording, does that make sense? It's one thing to say you shall or you can, but it's another to say you must have, the city must give consideration to the general policies.
Flaherty agreed it is true in most cases that resolutions are too non-binding. However, he said there can be exceptions.
Generally speaking, when we talk about resolutions, they are non-binding statements of preference in the council. That might not be true in all cases. I think they might have, legal impact in some cases, including directing a change to the comprehensive plan, which might be the case here. The only must I'm seeing in the ordinance is the fourth whereas clause that references Indiana Code, section of Indiana Code. It says each amendment to the comprehensive plan must be approved according to the procedures set forth in the 500 series, which is a reference to the section, and then goes on to say that the Common Council may direct the Plan Commission to prepare an amendment to the comprehensive plan. And I think that direction is given by resolution. So the Plan Commission, I think, is directed to take this up, and a resolution is the formal mechanism to do that. Even though we have normally colloquially sort of referred to resolutions as non-binding, I think this might be different or an exception, but I would invite council staff to correct me if I'm incorrect about that or share additional context.
During public comment on the resolution, Bloomington resident Pauli Terracone spoke in support of the changes to the city's comprehensive plan.
My name is Pauli Terracone. I'll be quick. I just want to voice my support for this resolution. I think it's a really low-hanging fruit for street safety and street users in Bloomington. And it can give a lot more benefits, especially to people who need extra time for crossing and make sure that they're at least in a more comfortable, visible, especially space whenever the rest of traffic begins crossing. So I think we should definitely prioritize this effort. Thank you.
Co-director of City Relations for Indiana University Student Government, Olivia Young, also spoke in favor of the resolution.
Good evening. I am Olivia Young. I'm the co-director of City Relations for Indiana University Student Government. We deeply care about issues surrounding city development and bettering the city's policies, and we believe in the continual effort to make transportation and city services more accessible and efficient for all residents in Bloomington, including IU students. Resolution 2317 is supported by IU student government because it will help the many students that use traffic stops on a regular basis, making a priority for pedestrian walkways and pedestrian recall phases to be used in the city of Bloomington will create a more pedestrian-friendly system for students, enhance accessibility, and improve overall safety for both drivers and students.
Councilmember Kate Rosenbarger spoke in support of the resolution and shared that the council previously discussed these changes while working on their No Turn on Red initiative, but at the time, they weren't able to include it.
Well, I'll be supporting this resolution. I did also just look up sort of how long this has been talked about in council after council member Voland's question. We talked about doing this also around the No Turn on Red in downtown and the in campus mapping a couple years ago that we passed in April 2021, but it was too cumbersome of a project to add in at that time. So I think it is nice that we've been talking about it, and it's just another one of those Vision Zero strategies that will help us hopefully lead to no traffic fatalities.
The council voted unanimously in support of the resolution. The next Bloomington City Council meeting will be held on October 11th.
Up next, local journalist David Askins of the B Square Bulletin filed a report on how the Bloomington City Council conducts its first readings. Askins has more.
The B Square Bulletin sends out an emailed morning bulletin every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can sign up for the morning bulletin by visiting bsquarebulletin.com and clicking on the tab labeled Subscribe. Here's an entry from a recent edition. The headline to this item is Title and Synopsis Only. At Wednesday's City Council meeting, the Council eventually reached the section towards the end of its agenda called Legislation for First Reading. Dave Rollo made a motion. I move that Ordinance 2327 be introduced and read by the clerk by title and synopsis only. It's the standard motion for an ordinance at first reading. But on this occasion, every council member voted against the motion. The ordinance had a negative recommendation from the Plan Commission, 6-3 against, and the council did not want to spend any time on the ordinance. After the unanimous vote against it, what should have happened at the city council meeting? Should the clerk have been asked to read the ordinance in its entirety? That seems to be what the standard motion is all about, whether the ordinance should be read in its entirety or just by title and synopsis. One indicator that the vote is about how the ordinance gets read, not whether it gets read at all, is a quirk in Bloomington's local code. Quote, at each reading of an ordinance, the synopsis shall be read, and the clerk shall read the ordinance by title only, provided there is unanimous consent. End quote. I don't think the local code is set up that way to allow any one council member to scuttle the introduction of an ordinance by voting no on a motion to introduce and read by title and synopsis only. Anyhow, that vote from last Wednesday is a good occasion to reflect on the question, what should the vote at a first reading of an ordinance be about? I think that vote should be substantive. It should be a vote on whether to advance an ordinance to a second reading. But to do that, the council would need to discuss the ordinance at least a little bit. But to discuss the ordinance a little bit, the council would need to change the local code. It's unique to Bloomington that says no discussion is allowed on an ordinance at its first reading. I hope the five new council members who take office in 2024 see fit to enact this basic procedural reform. Until next week, this has been Dave Askins with the B Square Bulletin for WFHB.
This month, For the first time in over 3 years, federal student loan borrowers will be required to make monthly payments. In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Annika Harshbarger reports on the impact this will have on borrowers. We turn to Harshbarger for more.
Student loans. Millions of people in the U.S. have them, agonize over them, and make payments on them, including me. To find out how borrowers can best prepare for repayments, starting again this month, I interviewed Phil Schumann, not only the Executive Director of Financial Wellness and Education for Indiana University, but also a self-described card-carrying member of the Student Loan Club. What is a student loan?
It's a way a college student can use to fund their education while in school. There are a couple different routes that they can go, either through a federal loan program or a private loan program. The federal one is the more common just because the federal government has set up a series of loans that enable students to get access to, I would say, lower interest rates and better or more favorable repayment terms. And so we see a lot of students who choose to use the federal loan program to help subsidize, if not, you know, fund most of their education.
How can borrowers best prepare for repayments restarting this month?
Number one, they probably should have been contacted by their loan servicer already. The loan servicer was supposed to contact people 21 days prior to repayment starting. So hopefully that's the case. If you haven't received those communications, then probably what you need to do, and honestly what you should do regardless, is you should go to studentaid.gov, log into your profile, make sure your contact information is up to date.
If it is, then the second step is to look at your budget.
So just see at this point, like how much money you're going to owe on a monthly basis, and determine whether or not that's an amount that is comfortable within your current budget. If it is, then you don't necessarily need to do anything else. Just make sure you're starting to make those payments. If it's not, the one thing you can absolutely do is contact your loan servicer and see what other plans you might be eligible for. Figure out what could work within your budget, see if it's possible with your loan servicer, and then start making the payments from there.
I wanted to know more than how people can prepare. I wanted to know how people felt while making their first payment on a loan that they've been dreading for the past several years. To do this, I contacted Delaney Joyce, who has around $25,000 in student loans.
So I graduated from IU in May with a degree in biology, and I got a job lined up about a month or two before I graduated, which I was really fortunate to have. My parents and I could not afford my college tuition just as it was. We couldn't pay it up front, so the best option was to get a loan and then pay it back later.
Did you have a conversation with your parents where you guys decided that, or was it something you just knew you were going to have to do?
I always knew that I was going to have student loans, but I still did have that conversation with them about exactly how much we thought would be necessary, and how much that I thought I'd be able to pay back within the time limit that I have now that I've graduated.
How did that conversation go?
It was pretty good. It's always stressful talking about money, especially when it's a large amount like college tuition, but it went pretty well. It's just a little tedious trying to coordinate with the group that you're getting a loan from and things like that, and then paying it off. But I think it's been getting easier with time.
Delaney's loan of $5,500 a year made it possible for her to work in her dream field. However, it didn't come without its consequences.
I was planning on moving into my own apartment in downtown Indy when I graduated. And that would have made things super, super tight for me money-wise with when I'd start paying my loans off. But I am living with my parents right now and commuting to Indy every day. So that opens up a lot more money for me that I'm not paying, that I'm not using for rent, that I can use for those loans and then also a little extra spending money. If I didn't have loans to pay off, I would be completely fine living on my own. But that, since I'm paying probably around $300 to $400 a month for loans
for I don't remember how many years, but that's a pretty good chunk of money.
The reality of paying back this loan has changed her perspective on college, although she never regretted her choice to pursue a diploma.
Prices keep getting raised every year for reasons that I don't know or don't understand. And I think that makes things harder for like the incoming classes. I think it makes it more accessible up front, but it comes back to bite you later on. And that's like it seems like the perfect case at first, but then once you're out of college, trying to live on your own and set up your insurance and things like that, when you're living on your own, you're independent, makes it a lot harder to do.
Yeah, it's kind of like selling a dream that isn't actually attainable in the end.
Exactly.
As my interview with Delaney ended, I wondered, how can somebody avoid their loan, significantly altering their future? Once again, Phil Schumann, Executive Director of Financial Wellness and Education at Indiana University, had the answer for me.
For anybody, you know, when we talk about budgets, we always tell people, budget for worst case scenario. And that's not to say like you're not making any money, but go for the thing that's, you know, go for the worst possible scenario within your realm. Because then, you know, whatever happens from there, you know, if anything is better, it's just going to be like that icing on top or whatever you want to say at that point. And it's not going to stress you out as a result of it. The worst thing you can possibly do is set your expectations really high, and then all of a sudden you don't meet those expectations. And that's where financial stress comes in.
This has been Annika Harshbarger reporting for WFHB.
Up next, we have Lil Bub's Lil Show, a co-production between WFHB and Lil Bub's Big Fund. We turn now to that segment.
Welcome to Lil Bub's Lil Show, a weekly co-production from WFHB and Lil Bub's Big Fund. We highlight adoptable animals with special needs in South Central Indiana and spotlight topics to promote human-animal welfare. First, here is today's featured animal. In the spirit of the pipsqueakery, today's featured animal is the rabbit. Rabbits are intelligent, social animals who need affection, and they can become wonderful companion animals when given the chance to interact with their families. Most rabbits will use a litter box. Spaying or neutering your rabbit improves litter box habits, lessens chewing behavior, decreases territorial aggression, and gives your rabbit a happier, longer life. If you decide to adopt a rabbit, make sure to have them spayed or neutered at the appropriate age. Bunny-proofing your home is part of living with a house rabbit. It is natural for rabbits to chew on furniture, rugs, drapes, and most deadly of all, electrical cords. Cords must be concealed so that the rabbit cannot reach them. Rabbits may have free run of the home. However, it's best for most, and necessary for some, to start with a space they can call their own. This can be an exercise pen, a large dog crate, a bunny-proofed room, or a very large cage or condo. Use only positive reinforcement, treats and praise, and never punishment when working with your rabbit. House rabbits and indoor cats can get along just fine, as do rabbits and well-mannered dogs. Dogs should be trained to respond to commands before being trusted with a free-running rabbit, and supervision is needed to control a dog's playful impulses. This is especially true for puppies. Most importantly, find an experienced rabbit veterinarian before a problem develops to make sure your rabbit has the care that they need. For adoptable rabbits in South Central Indiana, you can visit the Pipsqueakery's website, pipsqueakery.org, or visit the local Bloomington, Indiana animal shelter. If you're interested in adopting today's featured pet, you can learn more at our websites, goodjobbub.org and wfhb.org. You're listening to Lil Bub's Lil Show, a co-production of WFHB and Lil Bub's Big Fund. We now turn to this week's featured topic. Today, we're talking about a unique nonprofit in southern Indiana whose mission is to help all little creatures no matter their needs. The Pipsqueakery is a 501c3 nonprofit that focuses on small animals. They are both a rescue and a sanctuary. They provide care for medically and behaviorally needy rodents, rabbits, and other small critters. They also educate the public on their care. A big part of their work is to find forever homes and rescue placement for healthy, adoptable animals. The Pipsqueakery focuses on the care of animals with medical conditions, including paralysis, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, amputations, and dental disease. Their goal is to advance veterinary care and develop individual plans that prioritize accommodating the special needs of each animal and to allow them to live fulfilling lives as independently as possible. Taking on a variety of small animals requires a lot of specialized care. If you need a cute pick-me-up, you can visit the Pipsqueakery's Instagram page and see some cute photos of the many animals they help. Providing this type of specialized care requires a lot of hands-on help as well as resources. If you want to help out, you can foster or even adopt an animal from the Pipsqueakery. Fostering is providing a temporary home for animals while they await their forever homes. There are so many animals that need help and so many that are turned away. By becoming a foster, you'll be able to help provide a better one-on-one experience for animals in the care of the Pipsqueakery. You can also make a donation to support their work. To learn more about the Pipsqueakery, make a donation, or to fill out an application to foster or adopt a pet in their care, you can visit their website at www.thepipsqueakery.org. Thank you for tuning in to Lil Bub's Lil Show on WFHB, produced in partnership with Lil Bub's Big Fund. For more info on today's featured animal and topic, find us online at goodjobbub.org and wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. More information online at mpisolarenergy.com. You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Noel Herhusky Schneider in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our features were produced by Dave Askins and Annika Harshbarger.
Lil Bub's Lil Show is produced by Christine Brackenoff and Stacey Brodowski. Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Ashley Voss.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast online at WFHB.org.
The WFHB Local News is also available as a podcast. Just search our call letters, WFHB, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Subscribe to never miss another local news program.
Stay tuned for Spectrum, a program highlighting science and technology. Coming up next on WFHB Community Radio.
You've been listening to the WFHB local news on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a WFHB local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB local news archive at WFHB.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,